needs airplay, it's all just hearsay. Leave a wig like it was having a bad hair day. Lyrical glide master, ask him what's the secret, he said Shasta. It turned to formaldehyde faster. When I'm home with my lady, I try to duke her dairy. One night she tried to flail me with her ukulele. Pack your heat, the villain on the cover of Black Beat. With a bunch of crackers and some snack meat. They better have my skiller. And cut it out with all that funny hand job, will ya? All this trouble for a tall glass of OE. Drink it all fast and make your whole ass slowly. Remind me to remember what you told me. Holy moly, could you get a load of unroly holy?
One more beer. I'll take you all of you.
Here we go. Muda Scale number 32. The two-man crew back again. Producer not around this time, but definitely got Bad News Ramen over here. Better have my donuts. Breaking down another episode of Raw and all things wrestling.
Wrestling, except for TNA, which I hear is like kicking Raw's ass right about now. What do you think?
I don't know that I'd go that far. I've seen some things online where they're saying that. I don't really know where that's coming from, but there's some good things going on. I mean, it's a good time of the year for TNA. They have the Bound for Glory series, which is actually usually pretty interesting. They put a lot of their good, like, upper mid-card guys into a 2-month-long tournament with point systems and stuff like that. So it's usually good wrestling. I mean, the TNA...
And then Hulk Hogan comes in at the end and fucks it all up.
No, he doesn't get involved at all. That's one of the nice things. I mean, the winner of the series gets a title shot.
Brother.
But, you know, it's good. Like, Samoa Joe's in there. I can't remember all the people that are in it right now. But it's... Bound for Glory series is usually pretty good. I enjoy it.
And then, like, Bully Ray, is he still coming through? Or?
Yeah, he's good. He's a good heel champion.
So he's champ now.
He's been champ for a couple months.
And who's his, like, main adversary? RVD?
No. Well, it was Jeff Hardy for a while. That's who he got the belt from. But then once he beat him, Hardy kind of disappeared for a while. Most of it's been stuff between him and, his wife, whatever.
Well, I hear it takes, like, Jeff Hardy, like, what, like, it probably took Jeff Hardy probably about 500 takes to do that commercial that he's in now, you know? Hold on. I got it this time.
That's why he was gone for 2 months.
Yeah.
He's trying to film that commercial. but no, Bully's good. I don't know, probably kind of you're alluding to. There's no great rival for him right now. I mean, a lot of it is stuff between him.
Why would you say that? I'm not asking about any great rival. I'm a big fan of Bully Ray, dude. Bully Ray is good enough in the ring. He's good enough on the mic where he doesn't need to have a big time rival to like kind of cement his career. Which actually kind of leads into something else. If you want to talk about it right now, I'm gonna kind of put you on the spot a little bit if you don't mind.
Here we go.
Well, I mean, hey, listen, you did the best intro out of 32 Muda Skills. This is probably your best intro that you've done. So,
hey.
Good job on that. One of the guys that I follow on Twitter, and he kind of posed the question, he's like, John Cena is no different from The Rock. Why does everybody hate John Cena? And I kind of got into a little bit with him about it. I mean, not too much, but I was kind of like the, John Cena, I mean, I'm going to say this right now. John Cena is a necessary evil. Necessary evil of wrestling. You have to, if you watch wrestling, you have to watch John Cena. It's just the way it is. It's like you can try to put a rock, roll a boulder uphill, by yourself. It's never going to happen. You know, like a 500-pound boulder. It's never going to happen. You're never going to be able to do it. So John Cena, that's what he is. But, it always seems to me that, people either try to compare him to The Rock, people try to compare him to John Cena. And I just flat out said, okay, so Rock probably had about 3-4 years, 3 to 5 years of him being up on top. And while he was getting up, first of all, that statement is like totally wrong. There's no way that John Cena now was the way The Rock was when The Rock had his run as champion and stuff. I mean, the guy would turn, he was heel, he was face, he was heel, he was face, and right. Then he turned heel again. So there's no way that, that John Cena, you can put John Cena in the same thing as The Rock, but it's just always the same. People always they want to make amends for, like, what this guy is. And it's just that...
John Cena, you mean?
Yeah. I mean, for the past 10 years, the guy hasn't changed. It's something that we've kind of said the whole time. You've actually said it best, that he hasn't changed in the past 10 years. But it's just that kind of whole thing is that you have people kind of I guess this is more of a statement more than a question, but I mean, people always try to, like, you know, nobody likes Cena, and there's certain people that do. That's fine, and you're always going to have that wrestling fan that is going to be stupid enough to like Cena, is going to be stupid enough to like Sting when Sting was falling from the rafters. I mean, you're always going to have those dumbass fans, and that's the necessary evil of wrestling. Just call it what it is. I mean, he sucks, but, you know, he's important for the company. He's the face of the company, even though nobody likes him. And this can also lead into something else that you were kind of talking about before when I was doing my fast speed fast-forward through Raw. Mm-hmm. But he's not on the mic anymore. He's not cutting promos anymore, and he shows up at the end of the show and really doesn't deliver. But, I mean, that's probably the best way to use him as of right now.
Yeah, no, I think that is... I'm satisfied with the way they're using Cena the last few weeks. He has pretty much just his match, and that's it. A couple times he might have had like one early promo and then had his match later. But he's not monopolizing a bunch of time, which like he's done in the past, like especially on the build towards WrestleMania when you'd see him like 3 or 4 times in a show. So I'm fine. Like I said, he's a necessary evil, so I accept that. So I'm going to accept as long as they're not oversaturating with John Cena, like cutting promos and doing this and that. I can accept him just coming in and doing the main event match. I had no problem with the way he was used on Raw. As far as what you're saying with this guy, you know, my question would be, is he saying that John Cena is like what the Rock's recent run? I mean, if you want to make that statement, you know, I can't quibble with it too much. But if you're trying to say John Cena's current run is anything compared to like the Rock when he was in his prime, then yeah, that they shouldn't even belong in the same sentence. It's not anywhere near the case. Like you said, Rock went heel, Rock went face. Rock would lose to everybody, right? Rock lost clean all the time. So for whoever this anonymous Twitter person is to come out and say that the Cena run is anything like the Rock's is it's salacious, felonious, outrageous.
Outrageous. Outrageous. You know, before you even brought that up, I was thinking about it before, but then you kind of highlighted it again, and I remember thinking back then, it's like, Rock won, I mean, he lost for a good year. I mean, he had a nice little Dolph Ziggler run where he never won the big match, and they did a red build-up where we were waiting, and I think it was a pay-per-view where he finally won the title as a face. And it's just kind of the, even kind of looking back at what Cena...
Like me, not to cut you off, but... I thank you
for cutting me off.
Okay, good. Yeah. It's like, do you think that John Cena would have ever put over Mankind?
No.
And you would never get. I'm not a huge Mankind mark. I respect Foley, but I'm not like a big mark for him. But you know, he really, you know, carved out a legacy for himself in the business, and it's because you had a guy like The Rock or guys like Stone Cold or for his part Triple H that would put him over. And that is something that you did not, I don't think you would ever see from John Cena.
I'm not gonna bag on Cena right now. I'm gonna try to defend Cena as much as I can. When Rock would do the job for somebody, it was someone that was worthy of doing the job for. He would lose to Triple H. Triple H is great in the ring. You know, he could do the job for Triple H. I have no problem with that. Stone Cold the exact same way. He made Stone Cold a much better wrestler by jobbing to him all the time.
And by then, flopping on that stunner?
Well, yeah, I mean, Rock could sell. I mean, that goes without question. But the guys that he did the job for, they're worthy of doing the job. Mankind is probably only the questionable one that you'd probably be able to do. You could say, like, well, Mankind didn't deserve it, but look what happened when Mankind had it. So Mankind delivered the goods. He even jobbed for a small part to Billy Gunn. I mean, Billy Gunn put his, during the whole, like, Billy Gunn had the
God, when God spoke to Billy Gunn.
Yeah, but I was talking about the whole you know, they had a kiss my ass match or whatever it is, and right before the pay per view, Billy Gunn knocked Rock out and put his face to his ass and stuff like that. And, you know, stuff you never want to see the Rock in that position, but Rock did it. Even to a guy like Billy Gunn, and Billy Gunn got squashed. He'd put Al Snow over to a small part, whatever it is, get blindsided by Al Snow, and in the end, he kind of he always got the best.
He put Jericho over.
A lot of people put Jericho over, which is fine because the guy deserved it.
Right, but at the time, nobody of consequence had put Jericho over. Rock was the first person, like main event guy, to ever put Jericho over.
After he beat him the first time around, because he beat Jericho the first time around, and then He put over Jericho, and then when he had to put over Brock Lesnar, he put over Brock Lesnar too. And you knew that he was putting people over. And it's kind of the whole aspect of, it's funny, I dusted off the Ric Flair retrospective DVD, and Ric Flair would job for a lot of people to put them in the spotlight. John Cena, for the most part, if I can try to defend the guy, and I don't want to, but if I can, they're really, the guy that he had to put over, or the guy that he put over that really took off, even though he really didn't put him over, was CM Punk. He did the job for CM Punk a couple times. He lost to CM Punk, he lost the title to CM Punk, and CM Punk took off for the 434 days. And you're kind of looking there.
I don't really consider him putting CM Punk over, because Punk was over on his own.
Yeah, that, by the time, well, yeah, and that's what I mean.
The one guy I'll say,
but he still dropped the title to him. I mean, CM Punk won the title from John Cena.
Yeah, sure. But I'm saying he was over and he was established at the time. Like the one guy that I could ever recall, and I've said this before, that Cena ever put over that was not a big time player before that was Sheamus, right? So Sheamus, I'll give him credit for. He put over Sheamus as a monster heel when Sheamus really didn't have any credibility yet at the time. But anybody else that John Cena's had like good feuds with or things like that, he is the one. You know, he didn't put them over. They were already guys that were established, like Randy Orton, Edge. Who else did he put over? I guess he never really put over Brock, right? Brock beat him. Or he beat Brock. I don't know, whoever else.
Yeah,
I mean, just guys. Like, they I never saw him put over guys aside from Sheamus unless they were already, like, considered a main event level kind of person.
So when it's very easy for us to bash on Cena and say Cena's this, Cena's not that. Mostly we say Cena's not that. But if we kind of put his career arc in perspective, he came during a time where a lot of the established wrestlers were already kind of leaving. There really wasn't any young type of crop of wrestlers to come in. It's unfair for us, or unfair to me, to compare Cena to, say, a Ric Flair or a Bret Hart or a Stone Cold or a Rock. I think if you compare Cena to Hulk Hogan, they kind of had the same career arc. If you really think about it for a second,
yeah.
Hulk Hogan didn't have the title for like a year or for a long time. Who was the guy that had it? It was Macho Man. Mm-hmm. And when it was time to put the belt back on Hulk Hogan, because lo and behold, the earth doesn't rotate if you don't have one of a WWE guy, a handpicked WWE guy, to be the champion. So, and it's kind of the same thing with Cena. Cena had a year off where he wasn't the champion, so it's like, well, let's give it back to Cena because we know we can do business with Cena. We know Cena sells merchandise. Same thing with Hogan. But the funny thing is that when Macho Man won that title, you could finally see what Macho Man could do. Because he faced a lot of people. He faced Andre by himself. And I'm sitting there going, like, there's no way that he can even compare up to Andre the Giant.
Right.
And he had a great match with Andre the Giant. It wasn't even like a pay-per-view. It was like a Saturday night main event or something like that. And you remember it, right? A
little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and so he made it believable to as a champion. Macho Man having that run, people started realizing, saying, wait a minute, Macho Man's the way better wrestler than Hulk Hogan is. And CM Punk having the run in this new age of Twittersphere and social media, people starting to realize, and I think this is kind of what is affecting John Cena's title reign now, is that people are starting to realize that CM Punk, by and far, is way better than John Cena. Dolph Ziggler is way, by and far, better than John Cena. Del Rio is better than John Cena. So you can't kind of have the whole Hulk Hogan arc of doing this that type of a champion, I think, as of now. And that's why you get so much backlash. And I think that's why that guy kind of brings it up on Twitter, saying, like, well, wait a minute. We had 5 years of Rock. We had 5 years of Stone Cold. We have 12 years of Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels. What's the difference? Well, the difference is that all those guys could perform. And Cena, they could perform because they had people to perform with. I mean, if you look at Rock and Stone Cold, having those two guys in the same company at the same time, you're never going to have that again. John Cena doesn't have that. And he kind of does with CM Punk or with Ziggler, but he can't adapt to those guys.
Yeah, well, the other big difference is there was no time, like, you could say that Rock had a great 5-year run, but it wasn't like he was the dominant character for 5 years running, right? They had, like, we talked about this before, they had about 5 to 7 guys that all were, like, top main event material that beat each other, and each of them got their run. And that's why all of them, when they were champion, it stayed fresh, because no one was was just overdoing it with it, monopolizing the title. You're right to compare Cena to Hogan, because that's what it's most similar to. So, like, you got pre-Attitude Era, where Hulk Hogan dominated everything. Attitude Era, I kind of classify as a time where you had a bunch of top-level stars, and they kind of traded their title runs back and forth. And then coming out of it, when you had this new John Cena era, this PG era, then it's back to the Hulk Hogan booking style, where you're just going to have one guy be, like, the main center of everything for an extended period of time, and that's why it got stale. You didn't get stale with The Rock, because Stone Cold took the title. Triple H was the person that had the most stale title runs out of anybody during that Attitude Era, because his title runs would go on, and, you know, his promos weren't the greatest. You know, the guy could get it done in the ring, but
you wanted to pay that guy to paid just because you wanted to see that guy get beat. So when he did get beat, the payoff was good.
Yeah,
with John Cena, it's like, you have this kind of, I mean, there's this kind of this gray area where, like, he's liked, he's hated, but he's the face of the company, so we have to go on board with it.
Right. Well, I guess, I don't know. I'm not on board with it, but I am still watching. But I'm watching in spite of him, not because of him.
In spite, right? You're sitting in the corner when he comes off, you're in the corner, your hands are all crossed, you're all looking all mad and stuff. And
pretty much, like, oh, Del Rio's going to go down again.
So, yeah, I don't want to get to the point where it's very easy for us to bash on Cena, but I think at the same time, a couple of weeks ago, we looked at CM Punk's run that he's having right now, and we're probably going to say in 2-3 years it's going to be one of the better runs in all of wrestling. I don't want us to bash Cena without looking at what the circumstances are. There's a lot of problems that I have with the guy. I've never been a fan of his. I think I was a fan of his for maybe 2 seconds when he put, for the time it took for him to put Big Show up and do the attitude adjustment known as the FU back then. But there's reasons behind it. That the only thing is, so if we want to compare it back to Hogan, when Hogan was having that run in WWE, we still liked him. And it wasn't towards the end, and even like Rock towards the end, I didn't like him as a face. I didn't like Rock as a face towards the end. Mm-hmm. I thought he was getting pretty stale, and that's why they kind of had to make him a heel, and he tried so hard to be a heel that I didn't like him with that either.
Well, he couldn't even be a heel by that point. There was nothing he could do that could get people to boo him. Like, but once he got so big, right? He got to a certain point. I mean, the great, I know you don't like the singing too much, but the great promo he cut in Sacramento.
Yeah. Well, I like that singing.
Yeah. No, I know, but that, well, after that, it kind of, is when you started really going against him. But I mean, he went out there clowning the Kings in Sacramento, and they booed him the second he did it, and 30 seconds later they're cheering him. So even when he was trying to do heel type stuff, he was so over that he couldn't not be a face.
But here's the thing. So when Hogan won it for Macho Man, and I think granted at the time we could both say at what 12, we're probably about 12 or 13 years old, that we actually, even though Macho Man was the heel, we still like Macho Man, right?
Right.
And here's kind of the whole thing with Hogan and how good Hogan was. When Hogan beat Macho Man, even though you watched that match, and Macho Man was the whole show of that match, and Hogan to me was just kind of like kicking back, really wasn't doing anything, and then he came back at the end, and it was a typical Hogan match. And I think after we saw it, you know, we're kind of looking at each other going like, okay, Macho Man put on a hell of a show. But Hulk Hogan's champion, and I'm not really mad about that either.
Right.
There, I mean, there's a small part of us that even back then, even though we saw every single Hogan match for about 2 years, it was the same thing over and over again. They're taking guys down like your boy Haku, taking my guys down like Bad News Brown. We still liked it. You know, we still enjoyed it. And even after when Macho Man brought in Zeus, the human wrecking machine, and everything like that, and Bruce the Barber Beefcake was Hogan's guy, we still liked it when Hogan and Beefcake won. With the way it is right now, whenever Cena wins, first of all, I don't even like watching a Cena match, and it really can speak to his charisma. He doesn't have that natural charisma. I think he had good heat for probably about maybe a year or something like that after he was injured for a while and he came back. But he just doesn't have it. I mean, is there anything at all that Cena can do to make you like him?
No, not, well, I don't, yeah, I couldn't really put my finger on it, though. Like, it's, to me, I'm not into the quick fix of just turn John Cena a heel. Like I said, I don't really think he's good enough on the mic to pull off being a good heel. So, I mean, I couldn't put my finger and say, yeah, if he does this, I'll like him. I like it better than less he's talking. Like, you know, he's not terrible in the ring, right? And like that's kind of the one thing, like, you're gonna compare him like to the Hulk Hogan, right? Hulk Hogan was pretty bad in the ring. Cena is probably one of the better wrestlers to have played that character, right? So at least he's respectable in the ring. But yeah, the charisma is nothing near what Hulk Hogan had, and just the interest level.
So let me throw something else at you, because Bret Hart wasn't good on the mic. He wasn't good on the mic for a long time. I think he got better as he became pro-Canadian. Does that just mean that since, and you're a big Bret Hart fan, is it because Bret Hart was so good in the ring that his lack of mic skills made up for it?
Yeah, really, for the most part. And the other thing was, at that time, mic work wasn't as critical as what it is today, right? So as the Attitude Era rolled on, when he did get better on the mic through the whole, like, the Canada thing, like, that was when it was more important that you had to be good on the mic, right? But the earlier parts, when he was, like, a tag team wrestler or first breaking into a singles wrestler, it wasn't so much about the promos. I mean, they were still there, and some guys were better on the mic than others, but it wasn't the critical element to becoming a champion that it is today. So,
yeah, and that was kind of, I think that was more spawned from, I'd probably say, from Stone Cold, because Stone Cold really made a name for himself on the mic, and then following in his footsteps, or right on his heels, was The Rock. He had two really good guys on the mic, and
Michaels was good on the mic at the time.
Yeah, Michaels was, but in no comparison to Stone Cold or The Rock. I still remember, I didn't like Stone Cold. I just didn't like him, and part of it was because I thought Bret Hart was the better worker, and then here you have this guy that's just talking a lot of shit and like cussing and doing the middle finger and stuff. It's like, who the hell is this guy? And then they did this like one promo, this one promo spot where, I don't know, it was like the Olympics, right? So like they were showing like all these guys running, and Stone Cold like had a beer in his hand. He like threw the beer, you know, like during one of his matches or something. And then all of a sudden you see this guy kind of running the marathon or whatever, and he gets hit with a beer can and he falls on the ground. And I was like, okay, I see what they're kind of doing now, and it kind of made me look at it a little bit more, because everybody, when it was Bret Hart versus Stone Cold and Stone Cold passed out, everybody went all crazy for that. And all of a sudden I was like, it's okay. I mean, it's no big deal. I really don't care about that. And then so they had that really big push saying like Stone Cold's one of the, they said like Stone Cold Bret Hart was one of the best matches in the past 10 years. I was like, fuck that, dude. I'm like, Stone Cold is no way near anything that's happened in WCW right now. Bret Hart's nowhere near anything that's happened with WCW, with Ric Flair, with Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Chris Benoit. I've seen better Chris Benoit Booker T matches, or better Chris Benoit Diamond Dallas Page matches. And then they kind of had the whole promo machine going, and then it made me stop and look at it. And then I started watching the guy. I was like, well, this guy's really good. I just don't see anything happening with that with John Cena. There's a part of me that wants to. I mean, there's a part of me that wants to have Cena kind of ride off into the sunset and say, this guy earned his stripes and earned his keep, and then at the end, he was really good. But everything's been given to this guy. I just don't know if I can ever do that.
I guess to answer your question better, I mean, this is basically, I'm going to have to assume a few things here. I'm going to have to assume that the reason why Cena is what he is because he's been forced to be that way by the creative team, right? So if they would ever get to a point where they just say, okay, you can go do whatever it is you think you need to do, and he doesn't have to play this corny character that he is, then I would give a chance that maybe, you know, let the guy see what he can do, right? Because as much as we're crack on John Cena, you know, you can tell he's really like the corporate puppet of wrestling, right? Like, and so, you know, unless he's really that corny of a person in real life, which I don't know, maybe he is, but, you know, I don't think any of that stuff that he does is, you know, I would guess that he could be more interesting if he wanted to do something with his character that was unique, right? Like, you could tell, like, there's a lot of who CM Punk really is in his character, right? And that's always what's made, like really compelling characters.
Well, let me cut you off. Do you think there can be a CM Punk right now as we speak, or even for the past 2 years, without John Cena?
Yeah, absolutely.
You think so? You don't think the whole kind of counterculture of Cena doing what he's doing and that really kind of, because when Cena was having one of his mini runs that he was having before CM Punk took off, I feel that a lot of people, like, I was personally done with it. I was like, there's no reason for me to watch anymore, because if I'm going to get the same thing over and over again, I just don't want to watch it. And then CM Punk kind of filled that role. I don't know if you have a CM Punk as much as unabashed as he is right now without the kind of corporate dummy in John Cena.
Well, my response to that would be if it wasn't John Cena, then it would have been somebody else. Maybe it would have been Randy Orton, right? Maybe it would have been, I don't know, I'd have to think of who else it could have been. But I think that WWE was determined to have that character, and John Cena came around at the right time. If it wasn't him, I'm sure they would have found somebody else to play that role. So, in a sense, yeah, I think CM Punk would have happened regardless, because I think WWE feels the need to find somebody that they feel is their number one babyface and shove them down your throat as some guy that's unstoppable. Like Sheamus is becoming another John Cena, right? So, you know, if anything happens to John Cena, they got Sheamus on deck to just assume that role. I'm sure they would have found somebody else to do it.
And when do you think they kind of took this position? Because during the Attitude Era, it wasn't... Was it just because Stone Cold was such a good character and he could go on the fly that they didn't need to have that kind of corporation type champion? I mean, he wasn't. You think Cena is a product because they want to go PG now and this is the best PG guy they can go with? Because it wasn't that way during the Attitude Era.
Right. But the other thing you had in the Attitude Era is you had WCW. And WWE realized, like, they couldn't just, you know, they didn't have a monopoly at the time. So they realized they had to program well or else they were going to lose viewers. And TNA does not give anybody a compelling enough reason to switch away and start watching it, as opposed to WWE.
Well, I'm really close to starting to watch TNA right now. I think with the whole thing with Bully Ray, I haven't seen anything about it. The only thing I see about it is just the Twitter talk and everything like that. I'm very close to watching TNA. I mean, does TNA right now, because even when WWE was on top, you still had WCW, and then when WCW did the whole Monday Night Nitro, they started bringing all these guys from WWE, they became must-see TV, mm-hmm. or must-watch TV. Mm-hmm. Is TNA at any point right now even close to that?
No, I would say no, because TNA, they're still their own worst enemy. And the problem they are is they kind of want to book like WWE in a lot of cases. They want to put Sting in these big high profile matches. So they want to, when they had RVD, they want to have him or Jeff Hardy at the top all the time. So it's a little bit better because, you know, they do lose from time to time. There's nobody that's like a Superman. But there's plenty of really good wrestlers that are still kind of just going nowhere in the mid card. So in some cases, it's kind of like, it can be like SmackDown in a lot of ways. You get a lot of these good wrestlers in the X division and the mid-card talent. The tag team divisions are pretty good. The Knockouts division is way better than the Divas division, obviously. But they're not really, I wouldn't say they're really thick at the top. They don't really have a lot of guys that you could say, like, if they switched over to WWE right now, that they would be looking at being a top-line guy. I mean, I think one of the best guys they got is Austin Aries. And he's a really small guy, but they do a lot to keep him in, which is good. Your boy Daniels is really interesting. Him and Kasarian.
My boy Daniels.
Yeah, Fallen Angel.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, Fallen Angel and Kasarian. They're pretty entertaining. They're pretty good. So he's actually, like, his mic work's gotten a lot better, and he's pretty funny. You know,
Kasarian or Daniels?
Kasarian. No, Daniels. Daniels. Okay. Kazarian kind of plays off of Daniels, but they're good. They're a really entertaining tag team. Let's see, who else could I... Like, yeah, Samoa Joe. See, and that's the guy that I think that they should really be pushing, because I think Samoa Joe's just dying over there. I mean, he's kind of in the important storylines, but he's never the guy that comes out on top. It's a lot of Kurt Angle, a lot of Sting, Jeff Hardy and whatnot. So, I mean, to me, Samoa Joe's the best guy they have. But he still hasn't held the belt for probably 3 or 4 years, right? But like, if you look at TNA, because I've been watching it for a while now, that time when there was a time where I thought it was better, and that was when Christian Cage. Christian Cage had a great run in TNA, and at that time, like, there was him, Samoa Joe was fighting for the title. AJ Styles was up there all the time.
Kurt Angle was
still young and still in it.
I think that's the last time I saw it. Yeah, it was that whole Samoa Joe Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Angle.
Yeah. It was good back then, but it's kind of, you know, it's I'd say its mid card is pretty strong, but it's pretty weak at the top. But Bully's doing a really good job. That's not Bully's fault. They're just, you know, I mean, why not put Bully Ray against Samoa Joe? I mean, you could get some really good matches between those two guys, but, you know, you're gonna see Hardy, you're gonna see him cutting promos with
with his inner monologue.
No, yeah, Jeff Hardy. Is
well, let me tell you something, Jeff Hardy. I've been around a long time, dude. What do you got to say for yourself, brother?
Abyss, too. Like, Abyss is kind of floundering. They kind of make him like a comical character. But it's overall usually pretty good. The wrestling's good.
So that's the kind of the other thing. The reason why I don't watch TNA is because I really kind of got tired of the whole high spot messes that those matches lead to. There was no storytelling with it. It was just like a bunch of high spots here and there, no aspect of it. I think that unfairly kind of carried over from WCW, just because I knew WCW towards the end was just a bunch of high spots, just really bad wrestling. And TNA, to me, had some really bad wrestling. Like, the only TNA I would really watch was Desmond Wolfe going against that one dude, Apollo something, or whatever his name is.
Consequences Creed?
Yeah, I guess so. But, and it's like, so you're watching this match, and Desmond Wolfe is just controlling the whole match, like just doing everything that he can do, and then Consequences Creed comes in at the end and puts a couple moves here and there, and the match is over, and Desmond Wolfe loses. And I'm just kind of sitting there like, dude, what the hell is that, dude? And I know they have workers, but it's just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of seems kind of a little bit backwards to me. And
yeah, no, it is, but they got good wrestlers. Some of them are okay on the mic. Not, you know, some of them are okay. Nothing really great. But yeah, I'd just say they, of all companies, they should be the one that is trying to push their homegrown talent and not trying to take these guys that are in their 50s that used to be in WCW and WWE and keeping them on the top. And I'm not including Bully in that. I think having Bully as the champ is a good thing. It's a really good thing. But constantly, let's recycle a match with him against Angle. Oh, let's do Sting now. Oh, let's do Jeff Hardy now. And these guys are done. Like, Bobby Roode's a good wrestler. Austin Aries.
So, I know Sting's done. And I kind of had a feeling
he's not.
But I know he's done in the ring. I mean, I know he's... I mean, can he still pull his weight in the ring?
I don't know.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
So, and I know... I kind of felt that Kurt Angle, towards the end, was kind of losing kind of his sharpness in the ring. So, and Jeff Hardy has nothing in the ring either?
Nothing.
Is he all fat now and stuff with the or what?
No, he's not like his brother.
He's not like his brother. But he's looking pretty fat for a while. I know he had to wear the t-shirt every now and then.
But he always wears a shirt.
Yeah.
No, he's in decent shape.
But is it more kind of like RVD, where RVD to me, that the time and place for an RVD match or the time and place for a Jeff Hardy match is kind of gone now.
They're guys that rely on their athleticism that have lost some of it. And yeah, and then on top of it, you know, Jeff Hardy's not that big or that strong, so he really's got, all he's got is, you know, his swanton and then his twist of fate, and that's pretty much all he's got. Same thing.
So going from one backwards company, because we can beat this, I thought we did a really good job kind of bashing on Cena without bashing on him just to bash on him. We kind of had some thing behind it. But from one backwoods company to another backwoods segment, if you will, and it's funny that I say "if you will" because this is the guy that kind of created this guy, the Wyatt family. How geeked are you to see these guys? Do you have any interest or?
I'm way happy.
I'm just wondering how a son of Mike Rotunda can be so good on the mic. Or cut such good promos, because the only promos I ever remember Mike Rotunda ever doing was pay your taxes, don't let the IRS come get you, you know?
Maybe it's because he's the nephew of one Barry Windham. I don't know. Maybe he's got the Windham promo gene. But no, I'm pretty excited. I mean, I thought Bray Wyatt was really good when he had his first incarnation as Husky Harris. So I thought it was long overdue that him and Curtis Axel had come back up to the main roster.
But it's such a big... Listen, because I was thinking about that too. Husky Harris was a pretty quiet guy when he was doing NXT. They try to talk to him. He's kind of like off in the corner, just kind of looking at you like under his bangs or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. He had some good kind of catchphrases, like the Lamborghini and the...
Yeah, I thought that was... See, I didn't like that.
But you know what I mean, though. Yeah. Just that type of aspect of it where it was catchy. You know,
yeah.
It was snappy, you know, and then he just does this kind of complete turn, and he does this, and I'm just in awe. So
yeah, well, I mean, to me, I feel like I know what he can do, or I have a pretty good understanding of what he can do. I think he's going to be good. I think he's good on the mic. I already know he's good in the ring. What I'm really interested to see how, like, these other two guys, Rowan and Harper. I want to see how good those guys are in the ring. I want to know, are they just a couple of, like, big hillbillies that are a couple of strong guys that are going to back him up, or if these guys can actually get it done in the ring. And that's the thing that's great about the Shields. All three of those guys can go in the ring, you know, and I see that there's this potential to have another Shield-type faction with those guys, but those I don't know if those guys, I don't know what their reputation is, and I don't know how good they are in the ring.
So the difference with the Shield, yeah, and the Shield I felt brought this week on Raw too, which kind of concerns me because they did, you know, well, whether you like it or not, I mean, Christian being a head U.S. champion, I have no problem with that, but I kind of want to see where Dean Ambrose goes. With all this stuff kind of happened, the Shield have kind of been put on the back burner, but they're like the Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Jericho.
The Radicals.
No, because I'm putting Jericho in there, and then Guerrero of the WCW shows.
Right.
Whenever they needed to fill some time up, but they still had compelling wrestling, those guys did it. The Shield definitely did it again, put on a great match. Just Ambrose's antics in the ring, just kind of when they beat him and stuff, and he's kind of doing all these facial expressions and stuff, works really well. But I'll let you get into what you want to say, but what I want to get into is that the Shield came out, no promo work, nothing. They just came out of the blue, attacked people and left. With the Wyatts, this guy is just straight talking. Where it makes me kind of, it makes me not afraid, but I'm kind of sitting there going like, well, is Husky her or something like that? Because this guy can speak way better in the ring than he can on the mic. He's doing such a great job on the mic. Can he still deliver the goods in the ring? This is promo based and not performance based, and that's going to be the biggest kind of difference I'm going to see. I don't know if he can sustain a promo based gimmick, aka like a Fandango or whatever it is, because Fandango can't bring in the ring. If these two guys can't do it in the ring, and for some reason Bray Wyatt wasn't as good as he was as Husky Harris, I can see them falling on their faces too.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the wild card for me. I mean, there was enough that you had heard about, like, Reigns, Ambrose, and Rollins, that you knew that even though when they weren't wrestling, you knew once they got to wrestle, you knew they were going to be fine. I don't know about
it. But we didn't know they were going to be this good, though.
Right, but, well, I don't know. I think you could have made an educated guess based on, like, what their background was and the successes that guys like CM Punk and those guys have had, Daniel Bryan. Like, I figured they were pretty technically sound. Like, Reigns probably would have been the one that was the most wild card just because, like, all you hear is the guy's really, really raw, and he's a lot more polished than I thought, and I think he's gotten a lot better. So that's what I don't know. I don't know how good Rowan and Harper are in the ring at all. They don't talk either, right? Or I don't get the impression that they do. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if those guys can pull their weight in there. And what's going to happen with Husky Harris, right?
So when do you think they're going to come? You think they're going to come next week? Is it next Monday?
They
announced it. So, Sergio, my fast forward, I missed it or what?
Yeah.
Man. See, so watch all of Raw because you're going to miss them.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty impressive that they ended with them, with the rocking chair and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I still remember the rocking chair from Mork and Mindy. There was a Mork and Mindy episode where, like, the grandma died. And the chair was rocking, scared me half to death. So that rocking chair right now, so you've seen that
rocking chair.
Yeah, it's creepy. It's freaking me out, man. I can't help it, man.
But since we're on the topic of the Shield, though, you know, I think for the first time on Raw.
SmackDown,
yeah. You see a little dissension, right? When Christian came out with the spear, they looked like they were kind of pissed at Ambrose. I mean, Ambrose looked pissed at himself, too. But that was the first time that they ever looked like they were upset about anything that happened. And there's kind of been a lot of, like, on the internet, not speculation that it's going to happen, but I think the question is being posed a lot. How much longer are these guys going to last as a trio? Because everybody knows they're going to break out and be single stars at some point. Do you think the end is nigh?
I think it's easy for people to say that. That's the one thing that I wanted to bring up, like Twitter, everything else, social media. Is like, these guys are three major stars. They're going to be future champions one day. All three of them are going to be major champions. Mm-hmm. You're not going to have those three guys wrestling at the same time be champions. I don't want to sit here and say, like, these guys are going to be future stars and all three of them are going to be champions. Do I see the potential in all of them? Hell yeah, I do. Do I want to see Ambrose as the World Heavyweight Champion? He's ready for that spot. I think he's totally ready. I think Seth Rollins can bring back legitimacy to the IC title and finally hang an IC title on the guy that can actually work. He's small, but he's not too small. That spot that he did where he did against the Usos, when the Usos are the guys that are usually doing those spots, like him
jumped over the top.
That was one of the best spots I've seen in a long time. I was sitting here watching it the Saturday morning. My girls were playing the Wii, and I saw it and I was just like, I was like, girls, I'm going to come over here and watch this. Yeah, because that was one of the best spots I saw in a long time. I don't want to get into the whole thing. It's so easy. You know, everybody, and the reason why I don't want to do this is because everybody can sit here and say, like, it's time for the Shield to break up because all three guys are going to be major stars for the next years to come. It's very easy to say that. And I feel that when you say that, WWE can do that or whatever, or can kind of point to Twitter and say, yeah, you know, this is what you guys wanted, this, that, and this.
But you know what I mean, though.
Yeah. It's very easy for proponents, for people that want to break up the Shield, to say it's time for them to break up. But I don't see all three of them being made, all three the biggest stars at the same time. It just can't happen.
Yeah, and I mean, that's as easy to say as, Randy Orton needs to go heel, or John Cena needs to go heel, right? Yeah, it's easy to say. But I do think that at some point it's going to happen. But I think the Shield has legs, right? I think they can run this out for another 6 months to a year at least. But it does kind of beg the question, because you're getting you're about to get the Wyatt family. So now you're going to have what? You're only going to have like three stables in your entire company, and all three of them are heels.
And you have Sweet Tea and Bros Clay too, right?
Yeah, well, it's not really a stable. But you got the three-man band for what they are, but you're going to have the Shield and you're going to have the Wyatt family, and those are going to be the only stables you have, and they're all heels. See, to me, you think that somebody, like, there should probably be a face stable at some point.
I think the Wyatt family, I think for the most part, I think the Wyatt family can be a face group. I think there's, right now they're playing them as heels, but you won't know until it comes out, and or in terms of what they're doing. The one group that can be a face for a long time and be successful at it is the Shield. The Shield has enough people to like them where they can be face. I do not want the Shield to break up. I think they need about 6 more months.
Yeah.
A year would be great. That would be the best. But six more months. Even give me about 3 or 4 months. People are forgetting how good this group is, because all these guys are coming back, because Mark Henry has come back and is carrying good promos. He's doing a good job. Ziggler is doing a turn. CM Punk came back. But people forget, when all those guys were gone, the Shield was the only thing that was carrying it. And the whole thing is that if you break these guys up, it's going to be, you're going to have a long process for them to have any sense of legitimacy, because whenever there's good workers, it's the same thing, right? If you're really good at your job, right? If you're really good at your job, they're not going to put you at a higher job. Why? Because you're good at your job, you're the best at your job right then and there. They're not going to give you more responsibility because they want you to do the production that it is.
Right.
So the Shield is very, very good at their job, right? If they split up, they're going to keep them in the mid-card spot. They're going to job a lot. They're going to be Ziggler. They're going to be Damian Sandow. They're going to be Cody Rhodes. I don't need any more guys of that,
yeah.
Especially with the leaps and bounds that Ambrose has done. Ambrose is the star out of all the three. He's the one guy that can take off right now. He can be a world champion. Nobody's going to say anything. Now, do I believe that that's it for the Shield? No, because I think Rollins is just as good as Ambrose. And I think what Reigns has done over the past 2 weeks, he's really shown what he can do. That move that he did against one of the Usos on Monday, that move he did was a great move. So I'm not saying that Ambrose is the only guy that's going to be good, but Ambrose is he's the ready-made star. He's the guy that has the most in-ring work. He has the best psychology out of all three. He's ready. He's tailor-made for it. But he's not as good without those two other guys, and I want to see 6 more months of them going on. I don't want them to break up.
But you'd be fine with them turning face.
Yeah, I'd be fine with them turning face.
Yeah,
because they're faces right now.
I think they could very easily turn them to be a face team, and people would eat it up. I'm not saying that's what they should do, but if it comes down to it, and they need to put factions against each other, I think it'd be pretty easy. You wouldn't really have to change, as long as they did it right and they don't change what they are. I think they would get over huge.
Well, it'd be interesting to see, because Ambrose is in the Money in the Bank for the WHC.
Yeah.
I think out of all those guys, Sandow's in there too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Sandow or Ambrose, one of the two, I'm fine. And the funny thing is
I'd be fine with Rhodes.
I'd be fine with Rhodes too, but I think Rhodes and Sandow have a thing going on with the past Raw. I think they're going to break up. There's going to be some type of angle with both of them fighting each other, just because what's been going on with the past 3 weeks of them kind of knocking heads here and there, literally and figuratively. Rhodes losing to whoever he lost to on Monday,
Cesaro,
which I still don't get. I don't know how a Canadian guy can be We the People, but you know.
Well, that's good. Let's just get into that, because that's a really good segue. Because one of the other topics I wanted to talk about was this upcoming Money in the Bank. I find it very interesting that they got the two Money in the Bank matches, and one of them has all faces, and the other one has all heels. So I'm wondering what that portends, right? Does that mean there's going to be some turning going on? Because could have interpreted Randy Orton as making another small move towards that when he RKO'd Kane on Monday. But it's just, I've never seen matches like this where they keep putting faces against faces and heels against heels. So I don't think it's just merely coincidence. There has to be a plan in here.
I don't think there's a plan at all. I really don't see... There's not anything that at any major pay-per-view where something is... Except for the... You can say Dolph Ziggler's kind of double turn. The infamous double turn that everybody's geeking out all over about. I don't think there's going to be any significant storyline changes in this upcoming pay-per-view other than, say, Brian and Kane breaking up more than they have already. It's stuff that's already kind of tailor-made. They don't save it, just they don't use the pay-per-views anymore to do any major type of changes.
Well, okay, let's focus on the SmackDown one for a minute then, because I honestly think Brian's going to win the one for Raw. I'm pretty comfortable in saying that one, right? But when I look at the SmackDown ladder match, okay, so again, it's all heels, and if I look at that group of guys, really Ambrose is the only guy that I could see as being a person that they're looking to push right now. It's like, I don't think Cesaro's going to get a big push. I don't think Swagger's going to get a big push. I don't think Fandango, I don't even know why he's in that match, to be honest, but I definitely don't think they're ready to give him that kind of push. And then you have Ambrose, and then you have the Road Scholars. So now, if I'm just going to go take it at face value, I'm thinking Dean Ambrose wins because he's the only guy that is ready to be elevated to another level out of all that group.
And he's going to face Christian at the same time, at the same pay-per-view?
Is he fighting Christian?
I don't know. It just seems to me that he was going to fight Christian just what they're doing. I guess he's not.
No, he's in that ladder match. But the other thing that I could see would be, maybe this is me being hopeful, but a Cody Rhodes could come out of that as a babyface, right? And if he could come out, if he could be like the babyface, like yesterday he lost to Cesaro, but I guess technically he was probably working the babyface in that match. But I think people would get behind Rhodes if he became a babyface, and if he could come through and beat all those guys and win the Money in the Bank, and maybe Sandow screws him somehow, and then Rhodes still comes through. I could see him getting over big. But those are really the only two outcomes I can see.
The one, you always kind of point to Brian and say, Brian is a no-brainer to be it. I agree with you, but I think we're taking what Brian has done over the past month and a half. He probably had about two solid weeks of ring work where you're just sitting there going like, what the hell is going on with this guy? And he's parlayed that into kind of being the favorite for the Money in the Bank for the WWE title. I don't see that guy holding the WWE title. I just don't see him doing it. I can't see him carrying that company for what it is. I just think there's not a lot of guys. The only two guys I can see really doing it, so maybe it's unfair. The only two guys I can see doing it, if it's not a part where they have to get the title back, will be Cena and CM Punk. I'd be very happy to see Mark Henry win it, but you know Mark Henry's only going to hold it for about a month. So I don't see Brian. I just don't see Brian doing that with the way his character is. And I guess I'm kind of listening to other people.
It sounds like you're listening to Vince.
Well, it's more.
There's no money in this guy, John.
No, I think there would be money in it, but with the way his character is now, he's not coming across. He's coming across more comical than anything else. Where he's not overcoming his obstacles to kind of be that top guy. When he was having that run where he was just going like 150% of the ring, yeah. But then he started kind of delving his character a little bit, and whatever. I think he's fine on the mic, but I think with the way he is, right, kind of the comical aspect of it, I don't see a comical guy holding the belt and being taken seriously. I can see him holding for a little bit, but not for a long extended period of time.
I don't know that. I mean, there's some comedy to him for sure, but I mean, I think overall his persona has been pretty serious. I mean, all the matches, he doesn't want to take anything other than a pinfall or a submission. I think that's a pretty good angle. Like, he's playing the little man complex perfectly, and I think it works. I think he's
enough for a heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's where I disagree with you on that.
Why? I mean, because you're just saying you don't think that they will, or you don't think he can do it.
I know he can do it. I know he can have a Shawn Michaels run in him where he's a smaller guy and his athleticism takes over. Michaels had a way of getting his ass kicked all the time, and then when it came for the big wrestling match, he would deliver. To me, he's a prototypical small type champion, but he was such a big persona where you really didn't look at him as a small guy. Brian right now is really reveling in that role. I think if he was doing, I just don't think he got kind of a spot by just going 150% in that ring for like 2-3 weeks where you're just sitting there and you're watching this guy go for like 5 minutes straight, and you're going like, how the hell is this guy sustaining this? How is he doing this? And then that kind of stopped, and then they kind of put him more on the mic, and he kind of elevated his kind of insecure type aspect of who he is and stuff, and I just don't think that works for a champion. I personally don't think that works for a champion. Do I think the guy has enough goods and is good enough to be a champion? By all means, yeah, he is. But in terms of a guy that can carry storylines and stuff, I just don't know if he can outside of Kane or Randy Orton. And maybe, well, I don't know. I mean, you kind of have Kane where it's a good storyline, and then Randy Orton came in and then he made Randy Orton a better person. Yeah. So maybe anytime
if you want to put a program between him and CM Punk, you know, that's going to be great. If you want to do something between him and Ziggler, you know, that would be great too. When he had his previous run, I mean, he was going against Giants. He was beating the Big Show. He was beating Mark Henry on his previous World Championship run. You could even have him go and start challenging Sheamus, because he wants to make up for the 18-second defeat, right? So there's lots of directions. And I mean, I haven't seen a program with Daniel Bryan that he hasn't made the other guy look good. So I think there's a lot of potential in him being the champion. I think he could make a lot of guys interesting again. And that's the thing. It's like we kind of say on this, not to go back to the Cena thing, but it's a series of matches against him going against people that no one's interested in. And even guys that I'm not interested in, I became interested in them once they started working with Daniel Bryan. Like Randy Orton is like the classic example, right? You were as down on Randy Orton as anybody, but as soon as he got into a series of matches with Daniel Bryan, he brought the best out of him again.
Okay, I'll believe that, and I'll back you up until you put Ken's out of the picture. And if he can do that with Ken out of the picture, then I'll go behind everything that you said. I think right now he has a lot of help from Kane. He had a lot of help from The Shield. He had a lot of help from all these other guys that can perform at the same time, and he was the guy that came out of all of it as the top performer. So if he can do that without Kane, without that whole storyline, then by all means go and put the belt on or give him Money in the Bank. SmackDown with all the heels, I think Ambrose is kind of the – I think Ambrose is the next guy in line. I think Ambrose, you can put any belt in Ambrose right now, and he's legitimate because – he bumps like hell. He has a great ring psychology. He has a great character. He's off edge, and that really works. And I think he can. I think he's like a CM Punk. He can pretty much play any role you want him to play, and he can do it. So that's the guy that I want to come out of. The guy that I truly want to come out of that with the whole thing,
and
with my birthday coming up next week and stuff. You know, the Damian Sandow shirt.
I guess it is. Huh?
Yeah. So. But Sandow's the guy I want to see come on. And I think Sandow has done enough. I mean, he's jobbed enough. He's had to carry Sheamus for about a month and a half. And I think if you're gonna have a program where Sheamus is going to look good all the time, you're going to have to get your due. So Sandow needs his due. Cesaro needs his due. I think Sandow's a very intriguing. I really like what he's doing. I think he can be a Money in the Bank guy and really play that role very, very well if given the chance. More so to me than say a Dean Ambrose.
About Rhodes.
Rhodes? I like Rhodes, dude.
You're souring on Rhodes a little bit.
No, I'm not souring on Rhodes. If you're gonna compare Rhodes to Sandow or Ambrose, I'd rather have Sandow and Ambrose over Rhodes any day of the week. I like Rhodes. I think Rhodes is very good in the ring. I think he needs to go back to Caitlyn and do that whole Caitlyn storyline and stuff, because at least he was somewhat interesting. Just right now, if you're going to compare Rhodes to Ambrose, there's no question Ambrose is the guy that I'm more intrigued in. Exact same thing with Sandow as well.
Yeah. No, I think Sandow's probably a little better than Cody on the mic, but I think...
Oh, ring work wise. Yeah. Ring work wise.
I think Cody's great in the ring, yeah. And I think at this point... he's a little bit miscast as a heel. I think he's getting stale as a heel, and I think that he's a person that the fans would want to cheer if he was a face. I think I think he could
out of all the small time champions, you know, if you want to do a Shawn Michaels mold type champion, Rhodes best fits that bill by far. And the thing that makes it even more is that because Rhodes isn't too small, Rhodes is a pretty decent size, but he's still small compared to all the big guns of WWE. He could do a lot of things because he's versatile enough in the ring where he can do that. I still think he's a year away, and last year we said that he was a year away. I still think he's a year away.
Still,
yeah, and just because he's had a lot of he's been out for a while. He's been injured.
He only got hurt like once, and he's only out for like a couple weeks.
Yeah, but it was a lot of things happened during those. It was more like about 3 to 4 weeks, I think. It was like a month. Yeah, a month. So we're about 55 minutes in. You're looking at the time. What is that, champ? What time is that, champ? So we're getting into the Hall of Kayfabe. I haven't even thought about a Hall of Kayfabe. You've been kind of carrying that whole time of the show, but with all these wrestlers, and I haven't really thought of any lately. So
yeah,
in the beginning
we were kind of alternating back and forth every week, but yeah. I think I've done the last two. So if you got a name, then if you got a crew, you better tell them.
Well, actually, you know what? Yeah, and I do have a guy. And I'm surprised it's taking so long for this guy to get in.
We're saying that almost every week now, but go ahead.
No, but this one,
right.
When I say it, you're going to be like, yeah. And I'm not going to do any intro to it. I'm just going to say his name, and then I want you to tell me how you think about this guy, because you know how much I think about this guy. You probably kind of know where I'm going with this, right? But the guy that I want to put in the Hall of Kayfabe today is going to be 1AA Arn Anderson. All right. I want to know what you feel about this guy.
Well, I'm a little bit surprised. He's a guy that I had thought about, and I almost kind of thought, because I was really thinking about Tully too.
Oh, Tully's coming, dude.
Right. Well, Tully's I was thinking maybe they should come in together, but you want to give them both their own separate time.
Yes. Okay. And I'll tell you why.
Sure.
Sure. But go ahead.
So, I mean, most of what I know about AA is what I know through you. So it's kind of funny for me. The first time that I ever had exposure to AA was when the Brainbusters came to WWE, and you had been watching, because I hadn't get cable back then, so I had not seen these guys in WCW, and so they came in. It was just a couple of like.
Can you remember a time when people didn't have cable?
Yeah,
can you actually believe my youth? Yeah, same with me too. Like, I can actually remember when we didn't have cable, Channel 44 and Channel 20. You know, but go ahead.
Cable 12.
Yeah.
and so I just remember, who are these two bald, fat, old guys? And how are these guys going to come up and beat up, like, the Powers of Pain or Demolition, all these other, like, just, like, you know, they had, like, a bunch of big, like, roided up guys in that time in the WWE. And then I'm like, well, how are these old bald guys? This one guy looks like my dad, right? How are these guys going to come in and...
Well, you know, son.
Exactly. But, and then you told me, oh, yeah, you know, tell me how good they were. I got on board with Arn Anderson pretty quick. I was pretty slow to the party with Tully. But, you know, he didn't really get in a whole lot of mic time, I'd say. It was just like, he was just this coked out guy in WWE with a bad perm. But,
What?
Hey, I'm just...
That's my hero over there. Go ahead.
Just telling you what my initial thoughts were. But, no, I mean, over time, you know, especially once they got back to WCW and then I started watching WCW, then I think I got a better understanding of what they were and things like that. Because, I had never seen, like, Arn cut any good promos into WWE either, right? But when she kind of took me to the archives and showed me some of the old stuff that Arn Anderson did, like, yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Is that all you guys say about the guy? Is there anything, any moves in the ring that you saw?
Well, the spine buster, right? The AA spine buster was pretty good. It's a good move, but it wasn't like it was a finisher, you know what I mean? But, like, the guy was a technician, and he was just, like, a tough old guy. And then, yeah, it's funny going back and seeing some of the old promos with him. Like those old school shades that kind of like get darker from the top and then lighten up as they go down.
And the hat. Don't forget about the hat.
Yeah. I just thought it was pretty funny.
The big old, I don't even know what those hats, fedoras or whatever he used to wear.
Yeah, but I mean, always will go down is, if you say the enforcer in wrestling, every faction has an enforcer. But if you say the enforcer, I think anybody that knows anything, like the first guy that comes to their mind is Arn Anderson.
Well, this is, I can, you're probably going to have to stop me because I can go on for 20 minutes about this guy, but Arn Anderson, by far, to me, is one of the top, either five, if five is saying too much, but yeah, no, he's one of the top five best guys best promo cutter ever. I think you have, you know, you have your Ric Flair promos. You can't even rate a Ric Flair promo or a Rock promo or a Stone Cold promo because those are their promos. But just a guy that can go in and handle the business and say and set up the next show or set up the next even CM Punk, you can put that's a CM Punk promo. This guy is one of the top five, as he likes to say, he's one of the top five guys on the stick by far. And if you look at all the old kind of if you have the Four Horsemen DVD or if you go on YouTube and you kind of just listen to what this guy's saying, very good on the mic. And the funniest thing about the whole aspect of the Four Horsemen was I was always a huge, as you know, I was always a huge Horsemen fan. Part of it was, I think a large part is because of Ric Flair, because he was a Horseman and everything that kind of comes along with that. He was the leader of the group. He was the champion. And they really reminded me of the Yankees a lot. You know, just like guys that are always successful. They're always going to be in the mix. They're not always going to win, but they're like the standard. They're like the standard of excellence. They're like the guys that you compare everybody else to. And for a long time, that's what the Four Horsemen were. Going back to these DVDs,
All for One and One for All, John.
with JJ Dillon, yeah. Right?
Yes, yes, yeah.
But I was trying to get to something. No, but. You know, James J. just took it over. I can't think now. But
standard of excellence.
Yeah, but going back and watching that DVD, I brush off that DVD every like month without question. It's like probably the most watched DVD that I have. But you're going back and listening to all these promos. Arn is the guy that you watch, or Arn is the guy that really cuts the best promos out of all of them. He's very insightful. He's very knowledgeable of the ring. He has a lot of JR qualities to him. You know, very learned in the game, has seen it all, has done a lot of stuff. He was a part of the best wrestling match. My favorite wrestling match of all time, and we talked about this before, was kind of, because you're right, you see Arn Anderson, and the thing is, like, Arn Anderson is just, he's just tough, you know? Like, you say he kind of reminds you of your dad. You know, your dad's a small guy, but at the same time, like, I would never cross your dad, because I know your dad's, like, it's just like a steel of bricks, as strong as all hell. I mean, your dad, you know, it's like, you know what I mean?
They got the same haircut, too.
The same haircut, same bald spot.
Same glasses.
Same glasses. Probably drive Porsches and stuff and everything like that. But you look at the guy, and you're like, well, and you compare him to, like, say, the Road Warriors. You compare him to, and this, the, my favorite match that I've ever saw was Lex Luger and Barry Windham versus Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson. And I saw these two guys same way as you. And I saw probably, I had the same thought in my head 2 years earlier than you did. Like, there's no way in hell that these two fucking guys can take on Lex Luger and Barry Windham.
Yeah.
Especially just because Lex Luger was in his prime. Yeah. Like, there's no way in hell this can happen. And so, of course, fast start, Lex Luger, Barry Windham just overpower these guys. But then slowly, you know, and kind of Arn Anderson's claim to fame is you take out a leg of a table, a three-legged table ain't going to do nothing. So you pick a body part, you just handle that body part, and there's that aspect of the ring. He's kayfabe while he's saying it during the whole kind of, it's kind of like half kayfabe, half shoot in this Four Horsemen DVD. But, you know, that's what his philosophy was. Same with Ric Flair. That's why I like Flair, too, because Flair would just really work on the leg on the figure four.
Come on, man. You know you're supposed to not even touch the guy's leg, and then you just slap the figure four on like
and then
this.
You went like that, yeah.
And you arch your back.
Yeah. You kiss his knee, and then all of a sudden that's like the kiss of death right there. But, yeah, so...
Well, that's like an old school ring psychology kind of thing, right? Attacking a body part, especially for bigger guys. And I think that's something that's one of the things that, as you watched Arn and Tully too, it's like they were technicians. And even though Arn was a big, strong guy, he was still a technician, like for his size. So they would go after that part. And even though you're looking and saying, well, they're way smaller than these guys they're going against, when they win, you could believe it because they had really done the damage, right?
You kind of. So I've already said he's one of the best guys on the mic. And, you know, that might be up for debate with you, but I'd probably have to say he is one of the best tag team wrestlers ever. And I would put Ole Anderson and Arn Anderson as one of the top five tag teams. I would put Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson as one of the top five tag teams. I don't know if there's tag, you know, like if you list like your tag teams, like your favorite tag teams, right? You're gonna have the Hart Foundation,
Outsiders.
Outsiders, they're so physically imposing that made them so good. They're both of them were good in the ring, but they never really worked as a team. If you talk about like straight tag team wrestling, I think Hart Foundation is up there, but they're not better than any group that Arn Anderson was a part of. You know, in the day and age of the lack of tag teams, where the Usos right now are the best tag teams, when you go back when he was tag teams were the that was your staple of the show.
Right.
If you had a good tag team, you had a good wrestling company. During the middle and the height of tag team wrestling, he was a part of two of the best tag teams that I ever saw. I don't know if there's a better tag team. If you can't name a tag team right now, I don't know if there's a better tag team than those two tag teams he was a part of.
Killer Bees.
Okay, that's so. I rest my case on that.
Well, what about Legion of Doom?
Legion of Doom, just for ferocity, you know, just for something that you've never seen before.
But as a power team, they still work pretty well together.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, you could put Legion of Doom number one. I have no problem putting the Road Warriors number one.
I'm not saying they are.
But you can. I mean, you can make an argument for that.
I mean, I would think most people.
The Steiner Brothers.
Yeah.
Were a good team.
Yeah, Steiner Brothers. When Scott had the bad mullet.
Yeah.
When he was still super athletic.
Yeah.
That was a badass team.
That was a good tag team. Yeah. So
Demolition was good.
Demolition was good. I'd put Arn Anderson's teams ahead of Demolition.
About Strike Force.
Strike me. Hey, look at me. Hey, Tom Zenka, tag me in. One shot.
So, you'd be in the Royal Box.
So I think that's a good addition to the Hall of Kayfabe. I think somewhere down the line, we got to talk about our favorite matches and we can kind of get into it. Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, when they worked together, worked really well. And I think that's a good addition. I think we're pretty much wrapping up Moonskill right about now.
Sure.
Had a good talk about John Cena. Thought it was very insightful to talk about John Cena. It's not just a simple bashing that everybody else does. Even though we don't have, you know, the microphone where it takes away like our fan noise because it's 100 degrees in San Jose or the air conditioning.
You just gave away the location, man.
Well, they know we're in San Jose. I didn't say the street like you did. You know, here's the GPS coordinates if you want to know where we're at. Because Cena's like biting at the bit trying to get at us. So, like we always do, Moonskill number 32, I'll let you end it off and good to go from there.
All right, good. So, I'm glad to see the AA make it into the hall. And I think we didn't really get into this, and, you know, we're not going to have time to. I felt like the crowd on Raw was pretty dead.
Very dead.
But, and there wasn't a whole lot of, like, major events that happened, but I thought the show was good. Just in that, I thought all the matches were good. Like, the wrestling was really good yesterday, I thought, for Raw, which you don't always get.
So it was like a Saturday night's main event.
Yeah, good
wrestling. Just entertained throughout. Nothing major happened.
Right.
But nothing major ever has happened. Just good wrestling, good storytelling. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, so I think Raw's on a pretty good roll. I'd say that's about four or five in a row where you had, like, two great ones and a couple that were pretty good, and then one that was maybe mediocre. So I think, like, kind of what we predicted before WrestleMania, how kind of things were getting bland heading into Mania, but that they would come out of Mania strong when they'd start getting, like, all the other guys involved. I think that's what they've done, and there's a lot of depth to the roster, and they're putting more guys in decent positions right now. So it's a pretty good show. Glad Punk's back, and we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, that's kind of cool, but we got to go to the commercial right now. Good old Fab Five Freddy back in the day, cutting off Shinehead way back when. It's going to be Family Funk and
on the mothership.
Who needs all right, let's go 32. Here to go.
I'm out.
Like to go. Was having a bad hair day. Lyrical glide master. Ask him what's the secret. He said Shasta. The turn to formaldehyde faster. When I'm home with my lady, I try to duke her daily. One night she tried to flail me with her ukulele. Pack your heat. The villain on the cover of Black Beat. With a bunch of crackers and some snack meat. They better have my skiller. And cut it out with all that funny hand jive, will ya? All this trouble for a tall glass of OE. Drink it all fast and make your whole ass slowly. Remind me to remember what you told me. Holy moly, could you get a load of a roly poly?
One more beer. I'll take you all, Ollie.